Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, an exclusive report. You'll only hear it here. We're diving into thousands of pages of emails obtained through public disclosure that shed disturbing light on how gender ideology in one of the most scrutinized public school districts in America has led to secretive relationships between at least one teacher and one student in a way designed to cut parents out. So we'll dive through those emails with all of you. Also, the MLB All-Star Game in Seattle is finally over after all our hand-wringing. We'll talk about how it went and also what happens from here. There were efforts to clean up the city, clean up the homeless people, clean up the drug abuse, prevent crime, you name it, before the MLB All-Star Game. Can it last? I'll give you my opinion. I'm sure you already know what it is, but we'll hope for the best. Also, some wisdom from the Vice President of the United States on not only transportation, but also artificial intelligence. And later on in our closing sanity check, I will make a final plea with all of you who have not signed Referendum 101 to do so before we are finally out of time. All right, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. It is how we continue this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback, as we say. You can sign up for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. UndividedPod.com. And on our Patreon and local pages this morning, we published our exclusive report, which we're going to go through for you today on the live show. But I highly, highly recommend going to read through the details, see all the images of the emails that we're going to talk about today. Again, it's up on Patreon and locals right now. The headline, "Make sure this email is deleted, how gender ideology led to a secret teacher-student relationship." And in it, we talk about where a teacher's care and concern for their student crosses a line into something else, into something inappropriate. So I want to dive into the background of this a little bit. If you've watched the show, you're familiar with some of the challenges in the Olympia School District. Olympia, Washington, it's a very progressive area, and the school district, I think, reflects that, but so much so that they've run into a lot of issues and scrutiny when it comes to not only gender ideology in school, but also political agendas in school. We've done multiple stories on this particular school district. We talked about the fact that they appointed an anti-cop activist who was caught on camera in 2021 telling people to tear the city up. She got appointed to the school board despite the objections of parents. We've talked about a class it was more of a group in this school district for elementary school kids that gave them a safe space away from white kids. And then more recently, we dropped an exclusive report on the Olympia School District about an unauthorized sex ed lesson that Planned Parenthood taught in an elementary school class. So this school district is not only on the radar, certainly locally, but also nationally as well. And one of the parents who's been pivotal in blowing the whistle on some of the issues in that school district is a woman named Alicia Perkins. And Alicia contacted us now, I would say, Nicole, several weeks ago with a plethora, I mean, thousands of pages of emails that were obtained through public disclosure specific to a fifth grade teacher at Centennial Elementary School. Her name is Jennifer Knight. I will say up front, we don't know if Jennifer Knight is still employed by the Olympia School District. We have asked them. Once we go through these emails, I think you'll understand why we're curious whether she still has her job. But specifically, what these emails demonstrate is really the stunning way in which policies around gender identity at the school have almost fostered an environment of secrecy that's designed to keep parents in the dark. Now, it will come as no surprise to you that even at the state level, when it comes to our public schools, that there are policies around students and respecting their preferred gender pronouns. And saying, okay, if you're a student in the public school system and you tell us that you now want to go by he, him, or they, them, we're going to respect that. We're going to ask that teachers respect that as well. And there are some instances, and we've heard about this, where if you have a child who they're identifying themselves by a different name or a different gender at school, but they haven't told their parents yet, where teachers will even go to the lengths of not informing their parents and using, you know, their given name when talking to their parents, their biological pronouns when talking to their parents, but then they'll change them when talking to the kids at school. And that's where this environment of secrecy starts to begin. But for this one fifth grade teacher at St. Centennial Elementary School in Olympia, she took things a step further in trying to protect her fifth grade student, a biological girl, who'd recently apparently decided to identify as he, him, they, them at school. I want to read for you a couple emails sent between this teacher and, again, a 10-year-old child that is not their own child, a 10-year-old student in their classroom who has told the teacher they identify as a different gender and the teacher is trying to protect that student's secret. Here's one of the emails. You need to get a personal email set up so we still have a way to communicate. The emails go on. I kept emailing you, but I was worried your mom interfered before you saw my messages. And the messages get worse. Again, emails between a fifth grade teacher and a 10-year-old student. I was also serious. I would take you into my home anytime you need. Never think you have no one. She goes on to write, make sure this email is deleted when we are done, because otherwise, when your mom looks, you will be outed instantly. In any other setting, in any other scenario, if we were talking about those types of exchanges between an adult and a child who is not theirs, who they are not related to, we would universally agree that it is egregious behavior, that it is inappropriate, and that, dare I say, it's predatory. But in this case, you have a teacher who I have no doubt, after reading through thousands of emails that this teacher has sent and received, I have no doubt this is a teacher who cares about the students in her classroom. But she has taken that care and that concern and crossed a boundary where, because of her own gender ideology, her own beliefs on gender, she is almost acting as a savior for this kid who's not hers, going so far as to invite that child into her home without the parents knowing, and explicitly directing that child to delete their email communications. Again, you name a scenario where that would be deemed appropriate. It's certainly not appropriate here either. And now there's some other emails that kind of talk about how all of this came to fruition behind the scenes. For instance, this teacher, Jennifer Knight, again, referred to her classroom as Crew Knight. So in an email, this goes back to last year in the spring, Jennifer Knight emails about 12 staff members at this school to inform them of this student's decision to change their gender identity at school only. They say Crew Knight. Jennifer Knight says in this email, Crew Knight has a student who has recently changed their name and pronouns at school, and this email is to inform you of that change because you work directly with the child in some capacity. She goes on to point out that Washington Public Schools allows for this. In Washington Public Schools, students have the right to be addressed by their requested name, pronoun, and gender designation without parental request or consent. This student in Crew Knight will be referred to by request, and then it gives the new name, at school from here on. Please use the pronouns he, him, they, them, as the student has requested this specifically. The student has opened up to me these past few months and has just requested this change. Please understand that this change is his right and is not to be questioned. Please also know that they are not going by this name change at home, and we will not be discussing this with his family, nor changing the name or pronoun in official school documents, essentially. So here's the thing. Again, some of that is not a surprise to me. We know that schools in Washington State, if a child wants to be acknowledged by a different gender pronoun than what they use at home, that schools in Washington State, at least a lot of teachers, tend to abide by that. But what is different here and what takes this a level further is the extent to which other staff members, other teachers, other 10-year-old children in this classroom were asked to keep the secret as well. So now you have this entire ecosystem that is being built in secrecy to keep one entity in the dark, the child's parents. So you have kids in the classroom who are supposed to keep the secret from their parents. You have staff members and teachers who, if they run into this student or their parents out in the community, are expected to keep this secret. And that is what allows this environment to fester, where you have a teacher who goes to the lengths of sending private communications with their student to talk about this issue and telling a student, delete our communications so your mom doesn't find out. And as if that's not egregious enough, there's one email particular in these documents that to me, I don't believe the intent was sinister at all, but I believe that the result is sinister. So the email is an exchange between this teacher, Jennifer Knight, and the mother of this student. Now, keep in mind, behind the scenes, this teacher is telling everybody this student basically is suffering from gender dysphoria, in so many words. We're going to refer to them in different pronouns, using a different name. And then this teacher has the audacity to send this mom an email saying this: I'm wondering if you're willing to have an in-person, informal conference with myself, you, and the student to talk about how the student is doing. I'm concerned about her mental health, her self-esteem, and how she feels about herself is low. And I think meeting in person and talking together would help this child feel supported. I don't have all the answers, but I was hoping we could chat and see if we can brainstorm some ways to support her. So here you have a teacher who knows about something very significant happening in this child's life. The fact that the child comes to school every day and pretends to be a totally different kid from who they are at home. Yet this teacher has the audacity to, saying they care about the child's mental health, self-esteem, well-being, reach out to the parent, use the her pronouns, use the kid's real name, and hide this critical aspect of what's going on with this kid from the parents while simultaneously pretending to care about the kid's well-being and want to talk to the parent about it. How can you genuinely have a conversation with that mother about her child's mental health while hiding from her all of these things that are going on at school? And a month after that email is when that very same teacher is telling this kid, I'd take you into my home. A month after that email, this very same teacher is telling that kid, delete these emails so your mom doesn't see it, while pretending to want to work with the mother to improve the child's mental health. That is insane. And again, I think that this teacher, Jennifer Knight, is operating off some mistaken belief that this is the appropriate way to show care and concern for this child, that she thinks she's protected by the school's policies and procedures. Now, I wanted to add, we asked Alicia Perkins, who again was tipped off to this, ends up informing us about these emails, providing us with thousands of pages of emails to review a couple weeks ago. It took us some time to get through them and to get this story ready, but we asked Alicia to come on and just go through how this story came to her and what parents should make of a situation like this happening behind closed doors. Alicia, thank you for being here and for bringing this to our attention. How did this story come to you?
Well, I received it from a group of parents, actually anonymously, and they had said that they were concerned about their own students who were at this elementary school, who were being essentially forced to keep a, quote, class secret. And because of this, they issued a FOIA, public record request, to the district to try to find out what was happening. And that's when they received, you know, over 1,000 pages of emails between this teacher and this student that were private emails kind of saying what was going on.
The teacher in question is Jennifer Knight, a fifth grade teacher at Centennial Elementary in the Olympia School District. Had this particular teacher been on your radar before in all the involvement you've had in looking into issues like this?
I've received a lot about this particular teacher. She was very active with, you'll remember, the BIPOC clubs that we had that were shown to be illegal, that they had to stop. I was receiving information from parents very upset that she was having them do protest signs in the classroom and things like that over that. So I knew that this was an activist teacher, but in general, my goal is to just shine a light on what's going on with the district and not individual teachers. But this situation is so egregious that it's difficult not to.
Yeah, and it's hard to know, and we'll get into this, whether this is happening on an island with one teacher in one classroom or whether what we're about to discuss has become some sort of acceptable practice. So before we dive into the details of this, you know, you get your hands on this public disclosure request and these records and these emails. Alicia, you have, brought to light a lot of egregious things in this school district. Where does this rank in terms of concerning things that you've seen?
This is probably the most disturbing thing that I've seen because it is such a level of coordinated deception that so many people have to play a part in, including young children. Element, you know, we're talking about 10-year-olds here, that it was just beyond shocking. And it goes beyond school policy of calling children by their preferred pronouns, preferred gender, things like this. This goes into a secretive relationship now between staff and child, where deception and interference between the child and parent it is obvious.
Yeah. So let's set it up a little bit. There is a fifth grader, and this is all everything we can glean from the emails, right? A fifth grader, biological female, who is exchanging messages with this teacher, Jennifer Knight. And in some of the emails, the teacher is encouraging other staff to refer to this biological female student as with a male name. Is that correct?
The male name and with he, him, they, them pronouns.
And that, to your understanding, is in line with school district policy.
School district policy, and anyone can go look up their own school district policies. They're usually on their public website. So, for example, Olympia School District, you can look up policy 3211, which pertains to transgender students. And it does state that, I'll just read it to you really quickly here. Information about a student's gender, legal name, or gender assigned at birth may constitute confidential medical information. And I think it's interesting that they use the word may. Disclosing this information to other students, their parents, or third parties may violate privacy laws. And then it goes on to say, therefore, to ensure the safety and well-being of the student, school employees should not disclose a student's transgender or gender non-conforming status to others, including the student's parents. So this is a policy, and we knew that this was being followed. We know of many circumstances where parents have told me that their child, they have found out after the fact that their child is being called by a different name and different pronouns, perhaps going on a different sports team, using different bathrooms, things like that. But this situation goes into emails that the teacher has taken it upon herself to literally tell the child, you know, to delete emails to evade parent knowledge about their interaction.
Yeah, and let's get into that because when it comes to a teacher, you know, using a kid's preferred gender pronouns and not telling the parents, I've heard stories like that before. I mean, I think reasonable people can have some serious issues with that because it creates almost this weird relationship between a teacher and a student. But talk about the emails that go, as you said, go beyond that and really further that secretive relationship.
Well, there were several. I always try to give the benefit of the doubt, but in this situation, I do think that the teacher has gone beyond a, I'd like to help you out with this confusion you may be experiencing, to positioning herself almost as like a savior role. And, you know, some of the emails were, make sure this email is deleted when we are done, because otherwise your mom will out you. Another one was, I was serious when I said you can come live at my home anytime. Another is, I kept emailing you, but was worried your mom interfered before you saw my messages. You need to get a personal email set up so we will have a way to communicate, and make sure you use personal email in case this one goes away. I mean, this is a clearly going over a line that this teacher should be taking with the student.
It's insane. It's truly and so you've got the secretive email exchanges going on between the teacher and the student. I mean, inviting the student into their home if they want, saying delete emails so your parents don't see it. And then there's also this sort of class secret, right? There's this veil of secrecy that the teacher expects of her students?
Well, that's my understanding that, you know, what this is doing beyond setting up an adversarial relationship between the school and parents, which is horrible in the first place, is it set up now a secretive relationship between other students and their own parents. And that was the parents who sent me this, that was one of their concerns is, you know, my child is being asked to keep a secret and be deceptive now with us. So this has now involved not only this one child and this teacher, but it's involved several staff who are now participating in the coordination of essentially a cover up. And now other students who are young. I mean, these are elementary school students who should feel conflicted about keeping secrets from their parents. But that's what this has all been set up to do.
I guess if you're a parent who has a child in that school district, or really any school district, I mean, I know parents can be involved and they can ask questions, you know, what are my kids being taught? But as a parent, how do you even begin to guard against something like this?
That's the problem because, you know, in the research I've done, every parent can request records, legal records that the school keeps of their child, which may reveal that some of this is going on. But why would a parent even think that they need to do that? So what would tip a parent off that, hey, I need to order my child's records from the school so I can find out what's being done possibly in secret? No one's going to do that because you wouldn't have any tip off really that you needed to do that, or why should you have to do that? So I don't know what the solution here is.
Yeah. And as, I mean, these emails point out, you've got the teacher who's emailing the parents referring to their child as a girl by her real name. And so I guess if you're a parent, you wouldn't think of anything like, why would I assume that this teacher is using a different gender and a different name for my child when they're at school, when they're communicating with me using her actual name?
Correct. And I've heard from other staff members, not with this situation, but other students who are doing this at school, and then they will see them in public, which we all do. You know, when we're out with our kids, we see our teachers, staff members, administrators, because we're all in the same town. So grocery shopping, the mall, wherever. And these staff members have told me, so now I'm in a position in public when the student is with their parent, I'm now deciding, what do I say? How do I address the child? What name do I use? And it's involving them now, which most people would be uncomfortable with this level of secrecy that has now been, you know, placed on them.
Right. The pressure and to be involved in everyone involved, like you said, from the teacher to other staff members to students and their parents involved in this effort to keep that information from the child's parents, a fifth grader's parents. You have not yet, right, spoken to the school about this. I know that we've been in contact with them to get some answers to our questions, but you have not contacted.
I have not, but I do think that some answers need to be given about this. And I also know that they were issued a FOIA on it, and they had to go through all of these emails and redact the child's name. So presumably they know what's going on here.
Yeah. And I mean, there's some emails where the teacher gives the student a hotline for LGBTQ youth. I don't have an issue with that. You know, give the kid a place where they can call if they're having troubles. That to me seems more appropriate than creating this veil of secrecy and trying to deal with the situation yourself as a teacher. Alicia, I guess whenever we talk to you about one of these stories, and I kind of referenced it earlier, but I just try to put myself in the position of a parent and hearing these stories and hoping that they're the exception, not the rule. But then we hear so many other examples in this school district in particular. I guess, what would your message be to parents who hear this kind of stuff and are understandably concerned?
You know, my message is continually, we've got to wake up because we have been asleep behind the wheel for a very long time while a lot of these things were implemented. And some of these things I do believe are implemented with good intentions, but these are the outcomes. These are the consequences for this form of secrecy that has now been established between schools and parents, which is creating this tremendously unfortunate adversarial relationship between a parent and their school. And so I think that people really need to start paying attention. Look at your school policies. Like I said, this is all public. Look at OSPI's policy on this. Those are also public. Look into, you know, if I were a parent, I would be probably asking, is this legal? Did this go over a line? I would be asking the school, what's, you know, what is the line that a teacher can go across? And how do I know that this is not happening with my child? You know, these are things that we just need to really delve into that we didn't really have to several years ago, but we need to now. I think in this situation, this is so egregious, so far beyond the line. If I had a young child and I found out that an adult was telling my child, a 10-year-old, to keep a secret from me, to delete emails, to create private emails, I would have probably contacted law enforcement, to be honest with you. It, you know, it used to be a universal understanding that when an adult told a child of any age to keep a secret from their parents, especially regarding sexuality, that was a huge red flag. And we used to all agree upon that until about 2 minutes ago.
Be considered predatory behavior.
Exactly, exactly. So what has happened where this is now okay for adults to insert themselves and tell a child, we're now going to have secrets between us? It's not okay.
Yeah, it's not okay. Thank God for Alicia Perkins. Honestly, can we all give her a... for her bravery. Thank you, Nicole. It's not as effective clapping without somebody else audibly clapping with me. I mean, thank God for Alicia Perkins. You know, she sent three kids through the Olympia School District. Both she and her husband went to the Olympia School District. She cares. She's not a bomb thrower. She's very reasonable and rational in how she explains these things. And that's why parents send her stuff that they're concerned about, because she has been willing to put her face on all of this. I mean, she makes appearances on national news when they'll have her to talk about this stuff. And you can only imagine the kind of vitriol that she gets for doing it, but she just doesn't care because she knows that she's doing the right thing. And that's how we get out of this craziness, is people like Alicia Perkins, reasonable, rational parents, come forward and they say, absolutely not. This crosses a line. It's predatory behavior. Even if you try to put it under the guise of you caring about a child because they're having a crisis moment in their young lives. So I do want to note that we reached out to the Olympia School District to ask questions about this. Nicole sent them a series of questions. They got back to us with what I would consider a pretty generic response, pointing to the school policies and the OSPI policies that Alicia talked about there, where they say that it is in their policy to sometimes, yes, keep this information from parents. But as far as the emails that took it a step further from this particular fifth grade teacher, what we were told by Susan Gifford, the executive director of communications and community relations, she said staff are expected at all times to maintain appropriate boundaries with students and follow the Washington Code of Professional Conduct and district policies and procedures related to staff and student communications. In instances when there is reason to believe those expectations are not being met, we investigate and take appropriate personnel action. We do not comment on personnel matters nor students' private information. So, of course, our natural follow-up questions were, okay, was there an investigation then into these emails? Because, like Alicia said, the district knows these emails exist. They fulfilled the public disclosure request and took the time to go through each email and black out the students' information. So they know these emails are out there, and they knew this story was coming. So the question is, did an investigation take place? Because the most egregious emails occurred from spring of 2022 to fall of 2022. And is this particular teacher, Jennifer Knight, did she face any consequences? Is she still employed in that capacity by the district? Because while we can find some references to her in salary information from 2021, 2022, we cannot find that so far for this year. So we need that information, or we would like that information from the school district. So hopefully they get back to us. I'll also say, this is a frustration of mine and has been a frustration. Teachers are public employees. They work with your kids. They get paid with taxpayer money. The excuse of, how was that worded? We don't comment on personnel matters. You should be able to comment on personnel matters when it's a public employee. So we have some follow-up that we're going to continue to do and press for answers in this regard. But I will also say that this stuff isn't happening on an island in Olympia. just because the Olympia School District has become this poster child for, you know, woke ideology infiltrating our classrooms, it's not just happening there. There's a Como News article, and bless Como News for doing a story on this, because sometimes these issues with gender identity and kids, the mainstream media doesn't really want to touch them. But Como News just posted an article. Here is the headline: Seattle Public Schools offering gender reaffirming care to students at, quote, no cost. And I encourage you to go to comonews.com and read this article, because it's very well reported. And it talks about how two healthcare centers, and this is the state's largest school district, SPS, they are operated by nonprofits, which, according to Como, provide, among other things, gender transition medications and referrals for gender transition surgeries. So I think it just shows that gender ideology and our public education system in Washington, the two things are inextricably linked at the current moment. And it's not just in Olympia, it's in the state's largest school district, and it's happening in other school districts as well. And with this particular story from Como, there's this question about, okay, you have these clinics that are operating in this school district. If you've got a kid that goes there, they have gender dysphoria, they want to seek certain types of care. To what extent are parents being kept in the loop on that? To what extent are parents being told, hey, your kid showed up at the clinic today and they have gender dysphoria and they want to seek certain types of care? Now, under state law, a medical provider would still have to abide by state law when it comes to surgeries, for instance. A child cannot consent to a surgical intervention by themselves under the age of 18 unless they can convince a medical provider that they are a mature minor under state law. And then that leaves a lot open to interpretation for individual medical providers. So again, these things aren't happening on an island. We have to be aware of them. If you have not read our story already, which dives into everything we just talked about in even more detail, if you go to undividedpod.com and either our locals or our Patreon page, it is up right now. There is no paywall. The headline, make sure this email is deleted: how gender ideology led to a secret teacher-student relationship. Please go read it. We lifted the paywall so you can share it with everyone under the sun so they know what is happening here. I'm going to pick back up on this theme coming up in Sanity Check, because this to me is directly linked to the reason we've been pushing so hard for Referendum 101. And we are down to just days to get enough signatures to get that thing on the ballot. This is the kind of stuff that we're trying to prevent. All right, coming up next, the MLB All-Star Game in Seattle is over. So what happens now? What happens now after they went through all these efforts in the last few weeks to make a downtown Seattle seem safe and inviting? Is it here to last? I'll also make some acknowledgments of some of the really cool stuff that happened during the All-Star Game that I thought was absolutely neat and that I was glad to see go off without a hitch. That's coming up next. But first, we've been talking about our friends at Firstmark Insurance because, I mean, the fact that they're advertisers aside, it's a really good opportunity to save some money at a time when prices at the pump are out of control, when you now have more money coming out of your paycheck because of that pesky long-term care tax. So take the FirstMark challenge at firstmarkinsurance.com. It's free to do. And what they're going to do is they're going to talk to you. You can do it virtually. It just takes a little bit of time, about all your insurance, your needs. Then they're going to go out, they're going to shop the marketplace for you at no cost to you. And they're going to see if they can't get you better insurance and save you a little bit of money in the process. One of the things that Mike and I realized when we did the FirstMark challenge and then became members of the FirstMark family is that we were way underinsured. So as two people who work a lot and who work very hard for what we have, that was a terrifying prospect. Here's Dave Taylor. He is the CEO of FirstMark.
So the risk is, if you get an auto accident and you don't have enough coverage, you get an auto accident that's your fault and you don't have enough coverage, then they can come after you personally for any additional amounts over and above your coverage limit. And that means things like your retirement plan, or come after your equity in your home, or garnish your wages. So it's a big thing. And like with you and Mike, I just think most people haven't had someone take the time to explain it to them in terms they can understand and show them the how inexpensive it is to actually get the correct coverage.
Yeah, and if you're asking, well, Brandy, if I get better insurance, isn't that going to cost me more money? Not necessarily. Mike and I got much, much better insurance for the same price. In fact, Nicole, we just switched under FirstMark, right? They said, hey, you know, get rid of your, I had old crappy car insurance. They're like, oh, go with, I have Safeco now. I'm not doing a commercial for Safeco. I'm just letting you know. Never in my life with my old insurance company did I get a check in the mail for a It was like a, oh, no claims rebate.
Oh, yes, I've got a few of those.
I've never. So now I'm with like an adult insurance company or something. I mean, it was like a check for $47, but I'm like, So what I'm saying is now I have adult insurance thanks to Firstmark. So if you want to get better insurance or even save some money, we talked to a woman the other day who's saving $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year, all because she took the Firstmark challenge. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you. You know, I'm always looking out for your pocketbook. All these pesky tax increases. So that's a good opportunity to save some money. Okay, we're going to get to our segment Unbelievable in a moment. But Mike and I had a disagreement yesterday.
Oh.
And I want to talk about it because
I know
that there's going to be, in fact, in the live stream, this is my poll question for the day. Does it bother you when I swear on the podcast? Yes or no? So I have tried to cut back on my cursing. Don't you think?
Yes.
You can be on camera.
Okay. I didn't know how long we were going to go with this.
This
topic.
Is going to be like a couple minutes.
Okay. Yes, I think that you have tried to cut back. Yes,
I have. Because the only swear
it always
word
made me cringe.
I still say is bull, S-H-I-T.
Correct.
That's the only one I'm still saying, right?
I think you've snuck a couple others in there, but that's okay. As like here's quotes, I think it was a quote, something like that.
It bothers Mike a lot.
I know.
He says that I am too smart and elegant to be cursing like a sailor on the podcast.
I know.
And so
he likes that you're elegant.
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And so we had a little discussion and he does not want me swearing on the podcast anymore.
He said he was going to cancel his membership.
He's like, I won't listen. And I was like, you can't do that. We're getting married. And so anyway, because I love him and value his opinion, and I do agree with his criticism that we have a lot of moms and dads who listen, that if they're in the car and then, you know, here I come with my potty mouth, it might be problematic. Now, I pointed out to Mike that a lot of big podcasters, much bigger than us, curse all the time.
Right, but they know what they're getting into. Those are, you know, the Joe Rogans of the world. They're known for their swears.
You mean when you listen don't to a be show known. Called Undivided?
First, fine. Mm-hmm.
That you don't expect swearing. Here's the other thing. Mike used you against me. He says that you're on his side.
I am. I literally made the case to you. And I think that it's funny that Mike's having more of an impact than I do.
I don't remember you making the case to me that I should never swear.
I said that if kids are in the car, it's a little jarring. You're like,
I've got my best friend, and I should say one of my best friends, so my sister doesn't lose it, and my friend Johnny don't lose it. And my fiance teaming up to clean my mouth out with soap.
Only on camera.
Okay. But here's the thing. I do value your opinions, and I've made a promise to Mike that no more swearing.
Okay.
It is bullshit from here on out. Although right now on the live chat, I said, does it bother you when Brandy swears in the podcast? 82% said no.
Oh, I believe it.
82%. So here's what we'll do. Do you have the snort jar back there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Daniel says, undivided, uncensored.
That's why I say baloney a lot, because I start to say baloney.
Oh, Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, I have daughters that can be affected by it, Brandy. There are so many better words you can use. Oh, man. Okay.
Well, we know what you mean when you say the others.
Bullshoot. Oh, dang it. So here's what I'll do. If I slip up, because for the record, I never go into a show being like, how many curse words can I fit in today? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm just being myself. And sometimes in real life, I let it rip sometimes, even though I'm a classy, elegant, not let it rip that
I
way.
Was gonna say, I
let
it, I don't okay. like it.
And then I'm like, I'm classy and elegant, even though I'm a classy, elegant, intelligent woman, you know? But so what I'll do is if I break my promise to now you and Mike,
okay.
I will put $20 in the snort jar, which remember the money at the end of the year to the snort jar goes to our charity of the year, We Heart Seattle.
Right.
So I have a lot of incentive not to break my pledge to you.
Okay.
And to the daughters of Ladies Midwest Adventure.
I don't know. Adventure. You want to, I just realized there's like a cord coming through my camera shot there. you want to contribute to that charity. So I don't know how much.
Yeah, I'm getting married though. Not $20 a pop. I got to save money for our wedding.
Okay. Good deal.
Anyway, so I just thought I'd talk about a little disagreement Mike and I had and let him know that I love him and I value his opinion and I agree with him in many, many ways, Andrew and Nicole. And so from here on out, there shall be no swearing from me on the podcast. All right, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable, the All-Star Game in Seattle is over, so what happens next? So let me just start. The reason I'm categorizing this under unbelievable today is because I'm about to actually give a compliment to downtown Seattle, and that is frankly unbelievable if you listen to the podcast often enough. I thought there were some really cool aspects to the All-Star Game. There hasn't been an All-Star Game in Seattle since, I think, the early 2000s, so certainly not since I've been here. And there were some things that were really cool and that I got to give them credit for. Like, so it's T-Mobile Park, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have the T-Mobile's colors are magenta. Is it, or do they call it fuchsia? Magenta.
Magenta.
Yeah.
So they're very specific about magenta.
Yes. Down at Pike Place. Yeah, don't call it pink. Don't call it pink. I always drive by the T-Mobile headquarters, which is on I-90, and it's like lit up in magenta.
Mm-hmm.
So they had, and we got some pictures here from T-Mobile Park, they had a magenta red carpet for the All-Star Game down at Pike Place Market, which was so cool. It's like, oh, wow. It's like we felt a little Los Angeles for a day. Not the bad parts of Los Angeles. The part where all the rich people go and then they act like the rest of Los Angeles isn't bad. And I guess it's kind of that vibe because like two blocks away is Third Avenue. And then you just saw all these pictures of the kids having such a good time at the game and all the cool stars that were there and Old Mariners great and the home run derby, which I know, Nicole, you watched and you thought was pretty cool.
It was more exciting than I expected it to be. I mean, it was just kind of fun to see all the kids catching the balls, everybody up in the stands. I don't know if you saw, but Dory's daughter caught a ball with the mitt. He
can we tell
caught
that story?
Her when she was little.
Will you tell that? Is Suzanne okay if we tell that story?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So one of Dory's daughters went there and she was wearing
his shirt that said Save the Mariners from, I don't know, 90s, I guess.
Yeah. And she, also the glove?
The glove was the first mitt he bought her, I believe. Yeah.
And she caught a home run.
And she caught a ball. And she was in a spot that did not get very many.
Yeah.
So she got the one that came up there to her area. So, yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, so
very
look, special. I love this. It's mm-hmm. not like I wanted the All-Star Game to be a complete and utter failure for Seattle.
No,
but we care so much about having moments like that for the city, having moments like that that kids and families can enjoy,
mm-hmm.
that's why we talk about all the issues Seattle is facing. That's why we talk about the need to, with urgency, address the homeless crisis, the crime crisis, the substance abuse crisis, so that we can have more moments and memories like this in Seattle, so we can have more events that come to the city.
Right.
And you can have, you know, in which daughter was it of Dory's?
Middle.
So that when she grows up and has got kids and the next mm-hmm. MLB All-Star Game and she can send them there with that same shirt and that same thing and they're safe and then they can catch a ball. That's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go back to those wonderful days of Seattle where we can have these awesome moments and memories and you don't have to be scared about taking your kids down there.
Right.
So I am very hopeful that we've now seen Seattle can clean things up real quick when it needs to. Now, were there still some lingering issues? Yes, I saw this crazy video of a fentanyl dealer who dropped all his pills on the ground in the crowd, and he's sitting there trying, right in front of the stadium, he's sitting there trying to pick up all his pills, and there's like this dad that goes by crushing them into the ground, and I'm like, love you. So were there issues?
Throw away those shoes.
Yeah, you can't fix the underlying crises overnight just for a baseball game,
mm-hmm.
but it can be fixed with a little bit of political willpower. We can see it happen. We want to see it happen.
I know. It really was fun to watch. The Griffey, Buehner, Martinez, Wilson thing yesterday, throwing out the pitch. I mean, that really did bring some 90s vibes. It was high school for me when that happened. I had some of them on my binder. I actually wish it
was them right next to Dave Reichert.
Good times. But I think that it kind of also made me a little bit sad because I've been making this argument for a long time that a lot of us are streamers now. A lot of us have cut the cord.
Yeah.
And it makes me sad because a lot of the new guys are not as recognizable. I know some people who are big fans recognize them. I get it. But a lot of people don't. Like, I wouldn't have considered myself this ginormous fan in high school.
Right.
But I knew what they looked like. I had them on my binder. Things like that were
baseball
cool.
Baseball cards.
Yeah. You kept track of them even if you didn't watch every day. But now it's really hard because there's no way to stream the games unless you have cable. And I think FUBU might carry it, but there's like one carrier. But I really think they need to make baseball more accessible
for the younger generation.
For the younger generation. That makes sense. Hold on to them.
But cool memories. I'm really happy for families that were able to enjoy the All-Star game, make some memories with their kids, et cetera.
Yep.
It's just that I want people to keep that in mind, especially Seattleites. Your ballots for the primary election are going to come in the mail soon. And I want you to think about, if you had an awesome time at the MLB All-Star game, don't forget about everything that went into trying to make downtown visitable before that game happened. We shouldn't have to go through that whole dog and pony show. Our city should be a place where we can have a game like that and a world-class experience for you and your family and for tourists. And that's what's on the ballot in August. That's what's on the ballot in November. And for the rest of the state, that's what's on the ballot in November of 2024. So we're going to keep harping on that. And yeah, we're going to continue to be critical of Seattle, because that is the only way that we can restore Seattle to what it once was and make sure the city can live up to its full potential. Okay, coming up next, we're going to dip outside of Washington State for a moment. We've got some words of wisdom from Vice President Kamala Harris that I really thought you ought to hear today. But first, we've been talking about our friend Wes Jones with Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com. Wes Jones and his team have an awesome service called the Listing Boost Concierge, where if you've got to sell your home, but you know there's some projects that need to be done to it in order to get a better price for it, they can take over all of that. They can pick the contractors, manage the projects, get it done. You don't have to lift a finger. In fact, you don't even have to pay up front. If you don't have the funds, you can pay for it from the money you make from selling your home. Here's Wes Jones talking about the Listing Boost Concierge service.
So we're going to come in, number one, and we're going to inspect a home, do a pre-inspection, and we're going to find out all those little hidden bugs that, you know, a buyer may be concerned with. And if a seller wants to do some cosmetic updates, you know, whether it's flooring, whether it's lighting, countertops, even a kitchen, we're going to help guide them through that. So the Listing Boost Concierge Service, what we can do is we can project manage those rehab projects. We have a list of contractors and preferred vendors that we like to work with and have a ton of experience with, and we'll take that off a seller's hands. We'll go ahead and run that project for them, and we even have some options where they can pay at closing out of their net proceeds.
How great is that? I mean, you're cutting out so much of the stress from selling your home. If you got to dip out to another state, Florida or something like that, and you're like, gosh, I don't have time to deal with all these projects, let's sell with Wes. Let's Wes Jones and his team at Sell with Wes do it for you. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, looking at some national news, we thought we'd update you on Cocaine Gate. Well, at least we thought that we'd let you listen to a reporter trying to get Karine Jean-Pierre to update us on Cocaine Gate.
Into the cocaine at the White House, the Secret Service indicated if they're closer to...
Yeah, I don't have any updates. As you know, as you just mentioned, Secret Service is under their purview. They're certainly investigating the situation. I just don't have anything updated. I would refer you to the Secret Service on that particular question.
Nothing. We still don't know whose cocaine it is. And although we've been told by multiple mainstream outlets that we'll probably never know, I have faith in the Secret Service to get to the bottom of it and tell us the truth. We will find out. A couple words of wisdom from Kamala Harris. You know, sometimes when I'm thinking, gosh, I really need to read up on a particular topic that I feel like I don't know a lot about, I really want to do some hardcore research and hear what the experts are saying about it, I like to hear what Kamala Harris has to say, because I really feel like she is an expert and has such depth of knowledge in so many different issues. So let's hear what she had to say on the issue of transportation.
And I again want to thank the Secretary for your work. This issue of transportation is fundamentally about just making sure that people have the ability to get where they need to go. It's that basic.
Oh, okay. That's mini snort, 50 cents. That's helpful. Thank you, Kamala. How about, you know, another issue I really could use a little bit of information on to be able to talk about it with more authority is the whole confusing aspect of artificial intelligence, also known as AI.
I think the first part of this issue that should be articulated is AI is kind of a fancy thing. It's, first of all, it's two letters. It means artificial intelligence. But ultimately what it is it's about machine learning. And so the machine is taught. And part of the issue here is what information is going into the machine that will then determine, and we can predict then, if we think about what information is going in, what then will be produced in terms of decisions and opinions that may be made through that process.
Did you learn anything there, Nicole? I actually didn't know it was just two letters.
That's what I was going to say.
I thought for sure there was a T or a Q in there or something. Just A-R?
A-I, like, I thought it was spelled out.
Oh, like,
E-Y. I was thinking E-Y-E.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Always learning and growing with Vice President Kamala Harris. All right.
That's so sad.
Okay. Oh, but if, you know, our criticism is based solely on the fact that she's a black woman, so we should stop being sexist and racist. Mm-hmm. All right.
Issue that should be articulated is AI is kind of a fancy thing. It's, first of all, it's two letters. It means artificial intelligence.
All right. We'll get to your questions and comments from the live stream coming up. But first, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Next week is the week, Nicole. Beach, San Diego.
Yeah.
My bachelorette party. So I'm feeling great. I mean, I'm down 36 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I'm feeling great. I'm ready for the beach, okay? Packing my outfits, packing my bathing suits.
I know. I gave you your pack list yesterday.
You did, because you didn't tell me what we're doing, and so you just have to tell me what I have to wear and pack.
Right.
But I'm down 36 pounds. I'm feeling great, and I've heard from so many of you who've found success on the program. It's not easy. It's not magic. You've got to eat better, but it teaches you how to eat the right things in the right portions and then how to maintain that diet for life in a way where you don't feel like you're suffering or on some lifelong diet plan. So do what I did. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation. Super easy. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team, they'll do a quick video chat with you and they'll tell you what the program entails and you can decide in just 15 minutes whether it's right for you and you can be on your way to a happier, healthier, fitter you in no time at all. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, we'll get to your questions and comments from the stream. A lot of them are on our exclusive reporting about what's happening in the Olympia School District. Cindy said, if I were the parent of that child, I would make it my mission to get her fired. And again, we don't know. Maybe she did get some sort of discipline, but the school district has not told us yet as of last check. I agreed with Alicia Perkins, though. I would have called the cops. Because like I said, put those emails in any other context. If you find out an adult is sending those emails to your 10-year-old child saying, delete these so your mom doesn't see them, don't you call the cops? Right? It's just weird stuff. Jackie, thank you for being a subscriber. As a mom of a fifth grader, this story scares the hell out of me. Is it unreasonable to expect our public schools to act above board in all their actions, to be honest, and not prey on our children? This is allowing wolves to teach the lambs. It sometimes feels like we have no power to stop it, and some of us don't have the means for private schools. And I think that's truly the saddest part. You know, you can't just say, well, take your kid out. Okay, well, how are they going to get an education if I can't afford private school, for instance, or I can't homeschool them because I got a full-time job? So we have to demand better of our public education system. We can't just resign ourselves to, oh, you know, rich people, they can do private education, and folks who have the time can do homeschooling, and everybody else just has to suffer with whatever stuff they want to force on our kids. Matthew said, Brandy, do you think a wave of lawsuits might start making school districts reverse course, or are they fully on board with this and they will take the financial hit? Well, they don't take the financial hit if there's lawsuits. We take the financial hit if there's lawsuits. So I don't think they care at all about that. I think people have to start losing their jobs. And I really think there has to be messaging from the top down that what's happening is unacceptable. There has to be messaging from the superintendent of public instruction. I don't think you're going to get that messaging from Chris Reichdahl. Although, Nicole, we should reach out to him on this. One thing I like about Chris Reichdahl, he's always been willing to do interviews.
Very responsive.
Very responsive, even if it's a subject where he knows we're going to try to grill him on it. And I actually think if he saw these emails, I think Chris Reichdahl would condemn those emails. But I think on some other issues related to gender identity in schools, he's allowed too much. So 2024 might be something to look at for other candidates in that race. And then, of course, the governor's race. If you had a governor in the state who was messaging like, no, this is not what's going to be happening in our public education system, I think that would go a really, really long way. Matthew also said, not to be questioned. That's very scary language. Yeah, the teacher's language in that email saying this is how they will be referred to and it is not to be questioned. Crafty Grandma Crispy, I read the article and the email exchange was very disturbing and gave me grooming for child trafficking vibes. So I, you know, think the phrase groomers is overused sometimes. And I don't think I've ever really used it personally on the show. But this to me feels like grooming. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, man, you know, I resist some of those, like, I guess, like, that some people would consider, like, right-wing talking points. And then half the time, I'm like, wait a second. They were right. I was like, so, on vaccines,
I really think what
instance,
should have happened as far as parents getting involved and what should be part of the rule where they don't have to tell parents,
yeah,
is that they have to work with the students,
right,
to approach the parents, right? And
right,
maybe have somebody there, maybe. But I don't think this, let's conspire to keep this a secret,
right,
is very effective, because it's not gonna work, right? What? You're eventually gonna have to tell them. So why don't you work with her on finding the right approach to confronting your parents with this problem
or
that you're
send
having
them to the
or
counselor,
whatever it is. Send them to the counselor, have the counselor do it.
Right.
But not conspire behind the parents' back to keep this a secret and bring in other students, bring in other teachers. I mean, her whole class was in on this.
Yeah. And they were like, well, gosh, do I have to lie to my parents now?
Yes. I mean, that's what they're saying. Don't talk about this at home, right?
Yeah.
So I think that should be part of the rule, not just you don't have to tell their parents or don't tell their parents, but figure out a way to get the parents involved.
Right, because that's healthier. And then again, I go back to that one email, which it wasn't the flashiest of the emails, but it's this teacher acting with care and concern, emailing the mom saying, hey, I'm worried about your child's self-esteem.
Right.
I'm worried that your child might be depressed or whatever, their mental health issues.
Right.
All the while, that teacher knows that this kid has gender dysphoria, and they're keeping that from the parent while pretending that they want to deal with the mental health crisis, but leaving out what might be contributing, right, to the actual issues with self-esteem.
Right. And even with 5599, I will say, I mean, they're hiding your child, mm-hmm, but they actually still have to tell you that they're safe somewhere, right?
Yep.
So there's at least some parental involvement.
Notification.
We don't think it's enough.
Base level.
But this, this rule in the schools should be just as fought against.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And the school district says that they're working to change this particular policy, but didn't say how or didn't, mm-hmm, say why. So we will follow up because we have many more questions for the Olympia, yes, School District. A couple more on this. Tracy said, this is not isolated. I know firsthand. Everyone needs to understand that if a child is struggling with identity and they don't want parents to know, the staff at school is required to keep it a secret from the parents. I worked as a para and have dealt with it firsthand. I'm fighting in my district. Keep up the good fight. H said, thank God my kids are adults now. Schools have become indoctrination camps. Diana says, looks like there's a school board meeting tomorrow in the district. I think the parents need to show up in mass to demand accountability. That's not a bad idea. We need to tape that school board meeting. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, getting those records requests are not free. They're costly. And one parent was sued by the teachers union for just trying to get curriculum. What choices do us parents have? I mean, you can get, obviously, these emails all came in through a public records request. So you can do that. But I think, you know, just continually keeping those lines of communication open with your child's teacher, looking for things that don't feel right. I'm not a parent. I'm not going to tell you how to parent. But talking to your kid about, like, you know, asking them questions about what's happening in school and seeing if you get any sort of answers that don't add up. I just think it's just about being involved. All right, on swearing. Andy says, ladies don't swear, LOL. Okay. Well, that's probably true. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. So my daughters want to do a video to thank Mike and Nicole. Look at you. You're putting that in there so that you're just making a point.
There was a couple that said they didn't care either.
Okay. Oh, I noticed that you didn't put those in there. Interesting. But I've got to choose. Do I care about dropping a few swear words here and there? Or do I want to make Nicole and Mike happy?
Did you snort twice today? A lot of people
was,
say you owe
no,
$2.
One was a little one. It's like 50 cents.
Doesn't
worth.
Care.
It's like $1.50.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, $2. Uh-huh. $2 to the snort jar. You know, guys, for all of you who are out there trying to catch my snorts, like you think you got me, at the end of the year, I'm counting the money in that snort jar. And I'm going to ask each of you to make a matching donation to We Heart Seattle. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Because I will guilt you in December.
So
if there's like $50 in the snort jar, I'm going to be like, I need you to make a $50 donation to We Heart Seattle.
I'm okay with the snorting. Much more. The swearing thing bothers me much more than the snorting.
The snorting is a personal thing.
It's endearing.
It's a personal character trait I don't like.
Okay.
But again, if I swear, I'll put $20 in there.
Deal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just have to uninvite a few people from my wedding. Every $20, I'll just have to uninvite someone from my wedding. Sorry, guys. Why you look so confused right now?
I feel like my camera, I look red.
Oh my God, you're fine.
Sunburnt.
Anyway, okay.
But Yvette, you're not uninviting me because you're doing too much for you.
You're in the wedding. So, all right, that's enough comments for today. Thank you for those. Thank you for your input on my swearing. Let me see where that poll landed. 87% said they don't care about my swearing. But it's done. It's a done issue. We can do the news and important stories without me calling bullshit on people. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? So again, a reminder, go check out our story that we posted on Patreon and Locals. To me, it's just really disturbing. I think something every parent should be aware is not only happening, you know, in this one school district, but this sentiment is pervasive. I really, truly think it is. And, you know, there is this climate and these policies that are the result of gender ideology that almost this is the natural result of that. When you are making it okay in your policies in public schools for teachers to explicitly hide things from parents, you are fostering an environment where these secretive relationships between teachers and their kids can persist and can grow. And that's not healthy. I don't think any rational parent, any rational person or voter thinks that it's healthy. So when you read that story, after you let it sink in, I want you to then, if you have not already, go to reject5599.com and find a place to sign it today. If not today, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, this weekend. Because we're running out of time. And really, to me, the effort to put 5599 on the ballot, which is, again, something we've been supporting through our meet and greets. We've asked people to sign Referendum 101, which will put 5599 to voters. This is about stopping these sorts of policies in their tracks. It's about sending a message to lawmakers that some of the stuff they're doing is insane. And if you don't stop it here, it will continue and it will get worse. So even if you're someone who you've been hearing the arguments for and against 5599, which again allows kids of any age to run away from home to a shelter, say, I'm here for protected healthcare. And then that shelter and the state under law cannot tell the parents your physical location. Even if you've heard the arguments for and against and you're like on the fence about it and you can see some arguments and you can see some against it, I want you to think about what will come next because it is a slippery slope and it will not stop there. So it's really about sending a message that we're done with the erosion of parental rights. We're done with this effort to separate kids from their parents, to keep secrets away from parents. It's not right. And it's not the way that we should be going as a society. You know, we talk so much and so much of what we talk about on the podcast is connected to this very issue. The erosion of the home, the erosion of the family relationship. We look at all these young kids who are committing egregious crime, violent crime, sky high, so much of it committed by kids under the age of 18. Weakening the relationship between parents and kids is not going to help with that. It is not going to help with that. And so Referendum 101 is our chance to stop it in the tracks, to send a message to elected leaders that we won't tolerate anything else. So if you have not done it already, please, for the sake of sanity, for the sake of our state, for the sake of our kids, for the sake of parents, go to reject5599.com today. You just have a few more days to find a location, even if you got to drive a little bit. I know gas prices are high. It's worth it. Find a location to sign the referendum and let voters decide if this is the direction they want to be going in our state.
I think you said this weekend, but it actually, I have to have them on Saturday.
Well, so. Yeah, but technically it's the 22nd. So they just want them kind of in the mail. If you've got one, by the way, if we gave you a form somewhere, if you picked one up, you should put that in the mail by the 15th. You should put it in the mail by the 15th. The drop dead deadline is the 22nd, but they need all of next week to get things together, to go through any issues they might have with signatures. So if you're going to just go to a location to sign it, I think it's okay to do that throughout the weekend. Just make sure you get it done. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I mean, it's days like these and shows like our episode today that remind me why we're doing this. it is stuff that I would not have been able to do in my old job. And I'm grateful to people like Alicia Perkins who have said, you know what, I care about restoring sanity to the state, so I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to put my name and my reputation on the line to raise awareness for really some of these policies that are just not common sense. And that's what we're in. We're in a divide between the reasonable and the unreasonable. You guys are the reasonable, and you need to have a louder voice, and you need to push back against some of what's happening in our state. And I hope that this show and this podcast makes you feel empowered to do that. So if you've not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. Help continue to support this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. You can sign up on Patreon or Locals for $5 a month. There's no difference between the two sites in case you're curious. You can choose whichever one you please. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the live show at noon.